Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Bewitching Book Tours Blog Talk Radio. I am G.L. Ross, your host. Today's guests are the powerful writing team of Andrea Waltz and Richard Fenton. Before we get into our interview to discuss their book, Onyx Web, the series, Book One, I would first like to say our thoughts and prayers are with Brussels, Belgium. All right, guys, Andrea and Richard, we are so excited to have you here today. As we get started with our first question, I would love for you each to tell us a little bit about your writing background, how you got into writing, and then about your personal lives, if you don't mind sharing about where you live, your family, what you like to do in your free time. So, Andrea, ladies first, we'll start with you.
Well, thank you, GL. It's great to be with you. And, Richard and I actually, and I'll kind of combine the personal just a little bit, we met about 19 years ago. We just celebrated our 17 years married, and we met at LensCrafters, where we worked, and one of our common hobbies at that time, the thing that we both kind of loved, was writing. And so we ended up launching a business where we do professional speaking, sales training, that type of thing, kind of motivational speaking. And one of the things that we did along with that was we wrote short business parables, and one of them has been wildly popular. It's called Go for No. But our heart has always been, and even in Go for No, there's a little supernatural twist. Our heart has always been writing like real stories, real fictional stories. And so finally, after all these years of being in business and writing successful business parables, we finally, a couple years ago, decided to try our hand at fiction writing, and so that is where we are today. We're right in the middle of writing a very long 10-book series. We just finished book 5 of Onyx Web.
Right, and wow, Andrea, you covered that pretty darn well. That's why you're my co-author. Interestingly, our book series is, we call it a supernatural soap opera, and there's a lot of people who come and go. A lot of people who cash out early. And I was thinking about, you know, what it was that really got us started on it. Part of it was Andrea said, wouldn't it be fun to write fiction instead of always writing business books? And I said, yeah, that would be great. Then she came up with
Absolutely.
The idea for the ghost story. And then finally I just realized, I'm 17 years older than Andrea is. I realized I'm going to die a lot sooner than she does, and I think I just got fixated on death, you know. So writing stories about dead people became cathartic.
My gracious. Well, first of all, I had no idea you guys were married, so I think that's very interesting. How long have you been married?
We just celebrated 17 years, and it's funny that you would bring that up back up, too, because I wrote one of the posts I did for our Bewitching Book Tour was about how it is that two people can be married, be writers, work together, and not kill each other.
Exactly.
Right? We get asked that a lot. And so I did come up with a few rules, so we can talk about that later if you want. But it is fun.
Oh, no, I'd love to hear those rules, and I'm sure our listeners would too.
Oh, okay. Well, let me give you a couple right off the bat. I think I came up with three. I'll try to remember all of them in kind of the perfection. But the first one, the most important one, is that you both have kind of a vision of, you know, what it is you want to do. And Richard and I, we talked about the Onyx Web series and the characters and the story, I think, for a good year, literally just brainstorming and talking and going back and forth with ideas. And so our vision was very similar. And I think if you have two married people who both want to write, but one says, gosh, I really want to write sci-fi, and then the other is kind of like, I really like romance, well, it might be better to just go off in your separate directions. We very much have the same vision for what our story is. The second thing is, and how we do this actually, is that Richard takes the lead. And so he, what we do is we go through a pretty analytical process where we lay out the, each episode. Each book has three episodes. Each episode has about 20 scenes. And so we lay out each of the scenes, what's supposed to happen in each scene, and then he goes ahead and executes it, and then I get the first draft and do all of the editing and scratch things out and add things. So I think for us, and some writers might be different, they may be able to literally share the file and go back and forth. For us, it's been helpful that one person kind of takes that lead.
Well, obviously, whatever you're doing is working. I mean, go for no. I don't know if our listeners realize, it hit the number one Amazon sales and selling list, and it's remained in the top 10 for the last 5 years. So you guys obviously have a winning combination. Tell us a little bit, or tell us a whole lot if you want, about Onyx Webb, the main character, what makes him tick, his background.
Got it. And you know what? Our gambit has worked because Onyx is a woman. And we, in particular.
Oh, my bad.
Yes,
you can tell. I just told you before we went on live that I'm getting ready to get the book and start reading the first three episodes. So, my bad. Tell us all about
it. No, see, that was the thing. Well, we picked a name in particular that when people would see the title, they wouldn't necessarily know, because we very much wanted both males and females to both be drawn into the series. So we didn't want to have it be, you know, Jane Webb or Bob Webb. We picked Onyx because it was a little bit unisex in its approach. So it has worked. Onyx is a ghost. She lives in a lighthouse, not exactly the most unique of all settings for a ghost. I know that the lighthouse has been done before, but something about putting her in a condo on Fifth Avenue wasn't as spooky. And readers know from page one that Onyx is dead. So it's not a situation where we have to, you know, follow the process and then suddenly catch our breath that Onyx has died. We know in the opening scene, the opening episode, that Onyx is dead. The question is why and how and what's going to happen to her long term. And if we could sum up Onyx's situation or what she wants most, because as we know, every character has to want something. And we asked ourselves early on, what does Onyx want? And what Onyx wants more than anything in the world is one more day to be alive. She watches people who are alive sleepwalk through their lives, wasting their time, sometimes actually wishing they were dead. And she realizes the enormous gift that they're throwing away, and she will do anything to be alive again. She just has to figure out how.
I love that premise, because my motto has always been find the good and enjoy every day you're blessed with. So I love the fact that she's watching people waste their time and trying to help them straighten that all out, because too many of us do that. I find it interesting that you, in each book, have several episodes. This whole series is so interesting, the way you mash up and tie together suspense, crime, horror, romance, and then into a soap opera. How did you come up with this idea to make it like a soap opera and put multiple episodes inside a book?
Well, one of the things that happened on our year-long brainstorming is that we had come up with one storyline that we loved, and one of them had to do with a young, who turned out to be a billionaire, playboy, named Coda Mulvaney. Coda goes to a hotel in Savannah and ends up seeing a girl inside a mirror, and she's clearly dead, and he gets spooked, and Coda goes on a mission, and this was kind of the romance part. He just becomes absolutely obsessed with this girl, and he's got to find her and find out who she is, and of course she's dead, so it's, you know, we've got the creepy paranormal going on. So that was one storyline. In the meantime, we started brainstorming about Coda's family and his father and his grandfather and their backstories. And then we came up with Onyx, who lives in the lighthouse in Oregon. And we didn't want, we were unwilling to give up either storyline. And so, and then of course we also have the girl in the mirror. Who is she? How did she get dead? And so we said, we're doing all of the stories. We're going to create one big soap opera, and Onyx Webb is our central character, but the whole thing is a web, and eventually readers will start to see how all of these people and places and events are kind of tied together in one big web. So it happened a little bit by accident, but as soon as we saw the accident starting to form, we became intentional of building this intricate web of characters and stories.
And as many writers will, you know, will tell you, and we experienced it ourselves, your characters sometimes have a tendency to, to take over the asylum.
Sure.
Yeah, I would like to say that we're in full control here. We're not. Our characters battle. They battle for page time. They battle for dialogue. They get jealous of each other when we spend too much time writing one character and not writing another. And as much as I'm saying that, and it makes a sound like we're making a joke, or perhaps a little bit insane, it's somewhat true, because you reach, we reach the point where instead of saying, I would say to Andrea, hey, I came up with an idea, okay, for Stanley. I would say, you're never going to guess what Stanley did, you know, as if he actually did it and I'm just recording it. And so the soap opera nature of it, to answer your question, grew very organically, because as we tried to figure out the characters' backstories, they had personalities beyond what we imagined.
Well, of course. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking it's so hard for me as a writer when I finish a book or perhaps a series or trilogy, that it's hard for me to let go of my characters because they've become a part of my life. I mean, you said you're writing book 5 right now, and this is going to be a 10-book series, I believe. Are you going to be sad to let them go? I mean, is it going to be hard?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, we've already started to see the spin-off potential. So some of the characters we definitely will bring back in totally new situations. But if you read Onyx Webb, obviously you would remember who they are and what happened to them and all of that kind of stuff. So I think we have a lot of and we have the benefit of the fact that we have so many characters. We have the benefit of spinning a lot of them off.
Well, now, you talk about your characters. I think the part that really intrigued me when I was reading on your website, which I encourage everybody to go to onyxweb.com, and you can read all about the series and the episodes and about you guys. But when I was reading on there, it mentioned about the paranormal show host, Cryer and Fudge. So explain to us how, since this is a soap opera and they're the show host, are they kind of giving us inner dialogue, or what's happening?
Cryer and Fudge were developed as characters because we wanted to stay away from as much just exposition and third-person narration as we could. And we knew that there were certain things about the ghost world that people were going to want to know, as readers. They were going to want to know the rules of the Onyx Web series. What can our ghosts do, and what can't they do? Just like anybody would if they were reading Superman or Batman or any other series. And we really didn't want to be the people who just laid it out in this third-person narrative. So we said, well, what if we were to create a couple of characters whose function in the entire series is to have a show? They are on television, and one of them is a believer in the afterlife, and one of them isn't, and they battle each other all the time, trying to prove that there's a life after death or that there is not a life after death. And what if we learn all of the rules about ghosts through them and their show? And we also allow our characters in the story from time to time to be watching television as they're doing what they're doing and having the show on in the background, etc. And so it was just really designed just to be a technique by which we would be able to share information with the reader. But as we said before, suddenly one of the characters, you know, wanted a bigger part, and they really kind of came off of the screen, so to speak, and really became a more integral part of the series as well.
Well, integral is the key word here, and the web that you're talking about weaving, but it sounds to me like you had to weave your own web to come up with this idea. How on earth did you guys come up with this? I know you said one of you is more into paranormal, one into romance, that type of thing, but this is very, very intricate. How did you come up with all of this?
Well, one of the other things that really inspires us, and, you know, I know that one of the popular questions to ask writers is, you know, what are you reading and who are your favorite authors? And certainly we have our favorites, and Richard is a huge Lee Child fan. But one of the things that inspires us is TV series. And so one of the reasons why I sometimes have referred to this as a supernatural soap opera, or sometimes even in some of our marketing things, you know, we'll say it's like reading your favorite TV series is that we really love the intricate nature of some series like Downton Abbey or The Americans or
American Horror Story.
You know, they've got a lot of characters. They keep pretty you know, focused and tight on story and not so much on, you know, all of the other things, especially in books. We don't go overboard in description. We're really focused on story and moving the characters forward. And so for us, it was being able to kind of mesh all of these things together felt like we were creating a soap opera, like we were creating a fast-moving series that luckily the characters are all so different. You know, you've got the billionaire playboy who's chasing after this girl in the mirror. You've got Onyx Webb over in her lighthouse. You've got all these other, our paranormal show hosts. And so because things are not so similar, everybody, it sounds like, oh my God, it's so complicated. But really, once you dig into it, you can keep it all straight pretty easily. So we really had fun with that just because we love series. And they pull it off on TV, so we thought, well, let's try to pull it off in a book.
Yeah, I have a seriously screwed up brain. And so
that's for sure.
Yeah, and if you could see the storyboards in our office. I mean, seriously, the storyboards are, you know, there's 30 of them, and there's 45 post-it notes on each. And, I mean, the series feels like it's kind of free flow, but nothing happens entirely by accident. We do have a roadmap, and we do follow it.
Well, now, you're talking about your office and how you have all this laid out. Are you, too, the type that sit down and write all day long, or are you where one of you's a night owl and say, let's stay up all night writing, or what time of day and how do you go about writing together?
Got it. Well, as the quote when Andrea says lead writer, and by the way, lead writer does not mean most important writer. I happen to believe that editing is highly underrated and underappreciated.
I
hand Andrea everything. I hand her is too long, and when she takes the red pen to it, as painful as it is, and as much as it feels sometimes like she's cutting out, you know, certain organs from my body, the reality is that when she's done with it and has had her way with it, it's always better. And so I do the lead writing. I write in the middle of the night, and I say middle of the night. I'm usually up somewhere between 3 and 4 in the morning, as I was today.
You and I need to call each other late at night.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was up at 3. I finished my 4 pages for the day. We write 4 pages a day. Sometimes we miss because our schedule won't allow it, but on average 4 pages a day. I was done by 7:30, had breakfast, and then went to bed. And woke up for the show. Andrea will edit pretty much anywhere, anytime, any place. In the car, you know, at the mall, laying on the sofa while TV's running, and she's quite versatile in that regard.
That's fascinating. I love the fact that you're a night owl like me. You know, it's when it's quiet. Nobody calls. You can kind of just get into your own little cocoon and ride away. How did you research your information for the character of Onyx being a ghost? Are one of you into ghosts, or did you go visit haunted houses, or how did you go about learning about ghosts?
Well, I'm the paranormal fan of the two of us, and Richard is the non-believer. So what happened was, when we decided that, you know, that we were going to really make this paranormal-focused, we did actually do some research. We probably didn't do as much about ghosts and the common rules. Although we did buy a few books and kind of just look at what are the common themes, but we also just decided to say, okay, well, here's what happens in our ghost world. In our ghost world, Onyx survives and is able to live because she has decided that she is going to take the energy from the living, and she has a code that she goes by in doing so. She doesn't take the energy of healthy people, but she will take the energy and kill somebody who's sick or drug addicted. We've got all the rules. But the fun part, the fun part was some of the research that we did, where we actually went on location. So we decided, since Onyx lived in a lighthouse in Oregon, and we lived in Portland for 6 years, so it's a location that we're fairly familiar with, we did some research along the Oregon coast. We stayed in the Hasita Head Lighthouse, which is a real place, a real lighthouse, but we have a fictional lighthouse in our story that we call Crimson Cove. And then the other fun research we did was, we bring into the series a place called Lilydale, which is the first spiritualist community in the United States, the oldest, I should say. And there was even a special that was done, I think, on HBO called Lilydale, The Place Where No One Dies. It is a community with nothing but mediums and psychic mediums. That's who lives there, and people travel there, and they get thousands of visitors every year who go to get readings. We have one of our characters who is from there. So we went and we stayed in Lilydale for 3 days. So those are some of the fun things that we've done, where we've been on location, and when we go back to write it, it's just neat because we can really bring it to life.
I think that's incredible. I think Lilydale sounds like a fun place to go visit. If I were talking about visiting, if I were to come visit you guys one weekend, tell me about where you live, what we would do, and how you guys like to spend your free time.
You know, it's funny that you would say that, because after I did my little introduction, and this goes to show you the behind the scenes inner workings of our writing partnership. Andrea handed me a note. We live in Florida. We own a cat. And that was her way. That was her way of saying, I told you when we do the introduction, let them know we live in Florida and that we own a cat. So, yeah, I know. That would be kind of standard. We do. We have a fabulous cat named Courage. We live in Orlando. We used to live in a high rise in downtown Orlando, where a big portion of the book is takes place. But we moved 15 miles outside of downtown because it was so noisy there and so active. It was a lot of fun, but I couldn't get any writing done. At 3 in the morning, there was just too much noise. So we live kind of in the outskirts of Orlando right now. And Andrea loves Florida. Oh, she loves it, which is translation. I don't. I really don't. It's way too hot. It's way too muggy. But fortunately, I love Andrea, so we live in Florida.
Yeah, so if you were to come visit us for the weekend, we would have a great time. And we are foodies, so we would end up taking you probably to the Crest Steakhouse in downtown Orlando, which is featured in our book series, so we'd take you there so you could see that and have a great steak dinner at Cress, and then probably to some other great restaurant in Winter Park somewhere. So if you hang out with us, you'll inevitably end up at one of the parks because we have passes and we get to the parks fairly often, and we'll definitely have one or two wonderful meals.
And watching a lot of Netflix.
Yeah.
You sound like my kind of people, and I'll bring the wine.
Right.
Well, since we have a lot of our listeners who are into romance and like to know about our authors personally, I have to know who approached whom at the eyeglass place to get this relationship going.
Wow, that is such a loaded question. the answer is I approached Andrea. And I pretty much started proposing to her way, way too soon. I mean, like within about 2 weeks of our relationship beginning. And I asked her to marry me every day for over a year. And I'm not kidding. I mean, I really overdid it and probably pushed her away for a while. It became quite the scandal at work. That's why we no longer work at Lens Crafters, and you know, when but when you fall for somebody, you fall hard, and
exactly.
And so that's the story from my perspective. Now, Andrea might have a different take on this. I'm not sure.
No, I have the exact same take. But you know, it is funny that when you think about romance, and we had kind of, I guess, we both fell for each other very quickly at the same time. But yeah, marriage was like gonna have to wait a little while because he started it on me way too soon. But writing romance and being in a romantic relationship, you really have to kind of think back and say, okay, what is it? You know, what is it about romance that makes it so great? And in our story, our romantic relationships are very subtle. We have one storyline with Coda being pursued by his former fiance Mika, who just is desperate to marry him, but there's an underlying love interest that we will have throughout the entire book series, and readers won't get that payoff until almost book 9. And so I think the fun thing about romance is that it's the you're never quite sure, and it's always just suggested, because in my mind I told Richard, I said we are going to drive our readers crazy. By book 9 they will be desperate to have these two people together.
I was about to say, you're doing that slow build up just like mm-hmm. you made a Richard wait, that slow build up.
Exactly. So
yep.
Much better.
Well, tell me, for each of you, because we're coming close to our end of time, but I'm interested to know, you mentioned like your favorite writers that you're reading and books you're reading, but who would you each say influenced your writing style?
Wow, you know, that's really interesting. I'm going to give a very strange answer. The person who influenced my writing style more than anybody is somebody who I've never read anything of. And that is Kurt Vonnegut. I read Kurt Vonnegut's 8 Rules for Writing. And when I read those 8 rules, it was the most eye-opening moment ever. And I won't go through the 8 rules. I'll just tell you one of them. One of the rules is suspense is highly overrated. Tell your readers everything they need to know as soon as you possibly can and let them come along for the ride. They'll enjoy it more than having you keep secrets in, you know, in your hip pocket. And
right.
That went against everything I had ever done before. And the minute I started doing that, it liberated me as a writer and made people who were reading it feel like they really were indeed along for the ride. And so Kurt Vonnegut's my answer.
I'm very similar in that. You know, some of my favorite authors are very flowery with language, and Andre Dubois III and different Oprah, you know, I love Oprah book series books and Elizabeth mm-hmm. Gilbert and people who use great words. I am very succinct when it comes to words, and I don't like any adverbs, and I mean, I keep it really, really sparse. So it's kind of the opposite, which is really strange.
Well, obviously opposites attract, and they helped you guys create a great storyline. I encourage everyone to visit your website, onyxweb.com, to find out more about each one of the books. And, of course, they're available at all bookstores, definitely Amazon, since you've been number one there. It's been fascinating talking to the two of you. And I have no doubt in my mind that we will one day see Onyx Web as a television series, and we'll all be watching it on Netflix or on HBO or wherever. So thank you for being our guest today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.